Let's read together Exodus chapter 1. Here in this first chapter of the book of Exodus, we have the founding and forging of the nation of Israel in the midst of oppression in the land of Egypt. Exodus chapter 1, beginning at verse 1. Now these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Each man and his household came with Jacob: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. All those who were descendants of Jacob were 70 persons, for Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, all his brothers and all that generation. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, "Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and it happen in the event of war that they also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land." Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they were in dread of the children of Israel. So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shiphrah and the name of the other Puah. And he said, "When you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live." But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this thing and saved the male children alive?" And the midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwives come to them." Therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and grew very mighty. And so it was, because the midwives feared God, that he provided households for them. So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, "Every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive." Let's begin our study of the book of Exodus with some background notes. The theme of the book of Exodus is deliverance or redemption. It is the record of the redemption of the children of Israel out from their condition of slavery in the land of Egypt into a covenant relationship with God as a nation. The title Exodus means exit or depart from or the way out. The author of Exodus was Moses. Remember, Moses was the author of the entire Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. Now, critical scholars of the Bible debate and deny the Mosaic authorship of Exodus, but our Lord quoted from the book of Exodus in the Gospel of Mark, chapters 7 and 12, and in both chapters, the Lord said that Moses was the author. So that should be good enough for us. Here in chapter 1, we have some factual data that bears on the date of the Exodus. Christian scholars debate the date of the Exodus, and as a result, there are two views that evangelical Christians hold. One view is called the late date view and puts the Exodus at about 1290 BC. The other view is the more conservative view and puts the Exodus earlier at 1446 BC. This date of 1446 BC is based on 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1, which says, "And it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord." 1 Kings 6, 1. Well, since we can pinpoint the years of King Solomon's reign, a simple calculation gives 1446 BC for the Exodus. Now, Exodus 1 verse 8 says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph." That is, he did not look with favor on the Jewish people. Now, who was this new king? There was a new dynasty of Semitic pharaohs known as the Hyksos that took over Egypt and ruled between the years 1730 BC and 1570 BC. If the new king over Egypt, who did not know Joseph, refers to the coming in of the Hyksos, it fits in very well with a conservative early date of the Exodus. In this view, then, in verse 13, we have the expulsion of the Semitic Hyksos and the return of the true Egyptian pharaohs, who continued the oppression and even increased it, as we read there. And the Egyptians compelled the children of Israel to labor rigorously. Another verse here in chapter 1 that bears on the date of the Exodus is verse 11, which says that under the oppression, Israel built the storage cities, Pithom and Ramses. Now, if the city of Ramses here is in honor of either Ramses I or Ramses II, it makes the Exodus too late for even the late date view of the Exodus. This is because you must add an additional 80 years here for Moses. Remember, Moses is born in chapter 2 after the building of Ramses and is 80 years old at the time of the Exodus. So it makes the Exodus too late. So most likely, the city of Ramses was built earlier and named after the Egyptian sun god Ra. And the Ramses pharaohs took on that same name later. Now, I hope you were able to follow all of that. In any case, all of this fits in with the conservative early date of the Exodus of about 1446 BC. Well, so much for background. Let's move now to our doctrine or teaching points. Doctrinal point number one, the nation of Israel was formed in Egypt. The nation of Israel was formed in Egypt. The nation of Israel started with about 70 people in Egypt, as we see in verse 5. Remember, Jacob and his extended family had come to Egypt during the time of famine to be with Joseph. Joseph had settled them in the fertile land of Goshen in the Nile Delta. By the time they left Egypt, 430 years later, according to Exodus chapter 12, there would have been at least 2 million people based on the number of men 20 years and older that arrived at Mount Sinai. That number was 603,550 men, according to Numbers 146. So there must have been at least 2 million people that came out of Egypt at the time of the Exodus. But was 430 years enough time for this population growth? Yes, no problem. Calculations show that with a growth rate of only a few percent, it could be accomplished. Remember, they had about 150 good years before the oppression began, as verse 7 says. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. And then we see in the rest of the chapter that even during the oppression, the children of Israel continued to grow in numbers. Verse 12, but the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they were in dread of the children of Israel. So the nation of Israel was not formed as a result of the Tower of Babel, like the other ancient nations, but was formed in Egypt. The nation of Israel was formed in Egypt. Doctrinal point number two. The nation of Israel was forged in Egypt. The nation of Israel was forged in Egypt. Here in Exodus chapter 1, we see that the nation of Israel was formed in the midst of affliction and oppression. It was forged in the crucible of bondage and slavery. The new king that arose that knew not Joseph was afraid that the increasing Hebrew people would gain power, verse 9, and in time of war join the true Egyptians who hated the Hyksos, verse 10. And so the oppression and slavery began and continued, verses 13 and 14 once again. So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. You know, there are inscriptions and even pictures of Semitic slaves making bricks that have been found in Egypt, supporting the biblical record here. Because the hard labor did not stop the growth of the sons of Israel, the Pharaoh commanded the chief Hebrew midwives to practice infanticide and put all the male babies to death when they were born. Verse 16. And he said, when you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the Hebrew midwives rightly disobeyed this order and obeyed the higher authority, namely God. And so should we. We obey all authorities over us unless that authority contradicts what God has commanded. Then, as Acts 5:29 says, we obey God rather than men. Now, the question of whether the midwives lied here in verses 18 and 19 is important. Let's read verses 18 and 19 once again. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing and saved the male children alive? And the midwife said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwives come to them. Did the midwives lie? If they did lie, they are not commended by God for their lying, but rather for their reverence for God and not killing the babies. But I don't think they lied. I believe they were telling the truth. I believe the Lord preserved the Hebrew women from long labor times. Now, I'm sure the midwives didn't rush to the scene either, but they didn't lie. I don't think lying is ever condoned in the Bible. Now, that's a lecture in itself. In any case, Pharaoh's evil plans were thwarted, and then Pharaoh commanded that all male babies were to be drowned. Verse 22. So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. But out of these circumstances will come the birth of Moses and his training in the courts of Pharaoh. God was at work on behalf of his people in spite of the oppression. The nation of Israel was forged in Egypt. Now, what about practical application from Exodus chapter 1? Don't think God is against you when the going gets tough. Don't think God is against you when the going gets tough. If you had told one of the oppressed Hebrew slaves to take heart because God was working out his sovereign plans through all this hard work and slavery, how do you think that Hebrew slave would have responded? Hopefully, he would have refrained from swearing, but I doubt whether he would have said, praise the Lord. But guess what? God was working out his sovereign plans through all of this oppression of his people. God was working out his sovereign plans. Now, do you see the lesson? Are circumstances against you right now? Are you undergoing some kind of affliction and oppression right now? Does it seem like God has forgotten you and is against you? Listen, it's not true. God has not forgotten you, and he is not against you. Don't think God is against you when the going gets tough.